joined by Dave Preston. I am Noah Frank, and we are through the first weekend of March Madness. Maybe not as much madness as advertised. Certainly not in the Thursday-Friday games. Got a little more of a shakeup over the weekend with the second round. Let's start right off the top with the local teams. We had five, we'll call them local-ish teams, Maryland, Virginia, General Region. Sorry, West Virginia, we do not count you in this, although you've played quite well.
I'm adopting them right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Mountaineers look great. We can get to them a little later on. But Dave, let's kind of break down what happened, why it happened, and where everybody kind of shook out of our five. We'll start with Maryland.
Right. Well, yeah, Maryland, their issue at the end of the year. And actually, you go back to the game they lost on January 1st to Nebraska at home. They were up, I think, 65-51, and they didn't score for the final 6 minutes of the game. They had so many scoreless stretches. And I think what hurt Maryland this year was not having a good athletic big who was skilled. Demonte Dodd was a serviceable big man, but in against Big Ten competition, against high-level NCAA competition, that's going to come up short. And they were reduced to a jump-shooting team that when it works, it's great. But they went 6 minutes, I believe, without scoring a point against Xavier. And they also got crushed on the glass in that game. A tough finish, 24-9 after starting the season, 20-2? But there are building blocks in College Park for next season.
Yeah, that Nebraska game was such a red flag, and then we saw them do it again later in the
Purdue,
season.
Purdue, yeah, Wisconsin.
And you think a team that's led by Mello Trimble, that's got a veteran point guard, that you want the ball in his hands, he'll find a way to sort of manage those situations. But you know, they had a huge drought in this game, and I picked them out because of that. Because
right.
you get on that weird stage, and they were a great road team, but you just, if you can't find a way to score when you need a basket down the stretch. Those are the teams that go down in March Madness.
That was a tough quadrant to pick because you had a case to not have faith in any of those four schools, whether it was Maryland, Xavier, Florida State, or Florida Gulf Coast. You could easily make multiple cases for them being one and done and getting blown out in the first round.
Yeah, well, Maryland hanging tight for a while, but they fell behind late and Xavier pulled away. Virginia Tech was in a bit of a tough matchup, considering they could have beaten a lot of sort of middle seeds. I think they had the firepower to do it, but they end up against a very tough Wisconsin team.
If you had flip-flopped them into the Midwest and they had taken on Michigan State instead, I think they come out and they wind up losing to Kansas a couple days ago. What's really been impressive with what Buzz Williams has been able to do there the last couple years is, each year, he's gotten them better, and he's exceeded that expectation. Last year, I think they won their last five regular season games, got into the NIT. This year, another strong finish. I think they won six of their last nine in the regular season, got into the NCAA tournament, perhaps a year ahead of schedule. What hurt them this year was they lost their best rebounder, Chris Clark, to an ACL injury late in the year. They already weren't a good rebounding team, and the red flag entering the tournament was their last in the ACC on the glass, and Wisconsin took advantage with their bigs, and it was never, they needed to have a Villanova 1985 shooting game in order to win that game against the Badgers, and they didn't. Great season, though. Seth Allen gave us a lot of good memories as he wraps up his career for the Hokies.
And speaking of Villanova, they should take no shame at all in having lost because of the superior height of Wisconsin, because that came into play a couple days later. I mean, that was all just dominating Villanova down low. Villanova did not have an answer, even though their guards are good. I mean, knock off the defending national champ. The game after they knock you off, you can't feel too bad about a first round exit when a team just exploits what they're really, really good at.
And I think if you're Mark Turgeon, you look at Wisconsin, you look at Purdue, you look at those schools that win the Big Ten, that dominate in the Big Ten tournament. They've got two skilled bigs. That's a lesson to them because they got to play 18 games every winter against schools like that.
I think outside of the Dayton's draw, I think the A-10 had the worst draw.
It was tough. It was not ideal.
VCU got a horrific draw against a St. Mary's team that should have been probably a 5 seed. And I mean, that's just, their style can work for you in a situation at altitude. And also, if you find yourself down at the end of the game and you've been running around and trapping and trying to press, and I mean, you're not used to playing at 5,500 feet, you're gonna be gassed. And Jaquan Lewis left everything on the floor in that game, but there just was not enough there.
Yeah, you hate to, everybody loses, with the exception of the NCAA, the NIT, the CBI, the CIT, and then schools that don't have a tournament like the Ivy League. Everybody loses their last game. It's a shame that Jaquan Lewis lost his last game, the first game of that weekend, because I thought that VCU had a chance to get to the second round. Their Achilles during the season was they couldn't shoot the three effectively, and they went, I think they made 15% of their three-point shots against St. Mary's. A game that they were down, you need the three to get you back into the game. They did not have that, but they've had more than a few miracles this year. Their win at George Washington, their win against St. Bonaventure, it was almost as though they were operating on borrowed time late in the year.
Speaking of miracles, for about one half of basketball, Mount St. Mary's had everybody on notice. They were leading Villanova for much of that half. They ended up going to the break down one, but really acquitted themselves quite nicely after getting out of a play-in game just a couple days before. What did you take out of watching them play, you know, the defending national champs?
It makes me wish that schools that had to be in the first four didn't have to go to a neutral site like Dayton, or I think they might be looking to move it to Brooklyn in the coming years. But and granted, I'm not in the NCAA committee. I have no vote whatsoever. But all right, okay, these games are in Buffalo, Villanova, St. Mary's. You have St. Mary's go there a couple days earlier. You have their opponent go there a couple days earlier. They play that game on Tuesday because more often than not, those arenas are booked for that week anyways. You get those, it means that they save one flight. The fans only have to travel once, so to speak. The team feels as though they're a part of the tournament instead of an add-on, like they're at the kid table in the sunroom and they can't even see Grandpa and Chi-Chi.
Yeah, I mean, I know they get good crowds in Dayton. That was sort of a big part of the reasoning for keeping them there. It's a great basketball town, but yeah, it's so tough. And these are, I mean,
you got to fly twice in 1 week. Your fan base has to move multiple times.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah, it's not like, well, they're professionals and they're expecting, right. Like it's not like the NBA. It would be nice if they didn't have to do that. It just puts you at such a competitive disadvantage. And even though we've seen teams overcome that, saw USC win a game this year and Providence win a game coming out of their first fours, you know, to advance.
It's very tough though if you're from a one bid league,
right?
Which is all those 16s.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's almost, you're already staring way up the mountain at the impossible that's literally never been done before, and now you got to win a game 2 days before and come into it on shaky legs.
And sometimes from a different time zone, too. So you're on short rest, you've flown twice, and your body clock is a mess.
One local team did win a game, although you could be forgiven for having forgotten it. UVA was tested in a game that a lot of people thought they were going to get upset in against UNC Wilmington. Got through that and did not get through Florida. A lot more of what you were warning us about before the tournament for UVA in that second round game.
Not only did they not get through Florida, it was like Florida ran their sword through them multiple times, 65-39. If you thought they didn't get to the second round, it's almost as though scoring 39 points in a tournament game means that you lose credit for that first round win. Nice win though by the Cavaliers, bouncing back from I think 15 points down against UNC Wilmington to get to the round of 32. Tough to see London Parentes go out the way where it just seemed like he didn't have enough help. Who knows if the Austin Nichols kid had been able to stay eligible and not get kicked off the team in November, if things would have been different, but they were definitely one or two offensive weapons short. This was a rebuilding year because they lost a lot of talent last season. The fact that they still were able to win 23 games, get to the second round, that's a victory for Tony Bennett.
I heard a stat that Tony Bennett's teams have never beaten a higher-seeded team in the NCAA tournament, whether it was Washington State or Virginia. And they've been ranked very highly in a lot. I mean, they were a three-seed, I think, with Clay Thompson, and they've been a one-seed, so you can't beat a higher seed than
John Calipari had the same thing until they beat Ohio State about 5 or 6 years ago with a ton of talent on that team, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's the lies, damn lies, right, and statistics. It's one of those that says multiple things at the same time, but that streak continues with the loss to four-seed Florida. So that's it for the locals again. We'll get back to West Virginia in a minute, but what was the biggest surprise for you out of this first weekend. We did not see a ton of double-digit seeds. We didn't see any Cinderella in the Sweet 16. I was really, really pulling for Middle Tennessee to get into the Sweet 16, but that did not happen. So what was the biggest surprise to you?
My biggest surprise was that Xavier is still playing, because this is a team a week ago. You looked at what they had done on the court and on paper. They lost 7 of 11 games entering the tournament. 3 of those wins came against DePaul, so you almost can't count those. And Edmund Sumner had been gone a couple of months. This is a team still trying to find itself. The fact that they beat Maryland, that was impressive. But then to beat Florida State in Orlando, and from what I've been told, Orlando is in the state of Florida, where Florida State just happens to be as well. Granted, Florida State was a shell of its former self that was a top 10 team earlier this year, but you would think that Leonard Hamilton would be able to get them past an 11 seed in the second round. Xavier is my big surprise.
Yeah, they did what Duke couldn't do, which is to win in an opposing state, and arguably against a better team in Florida State than South Carolina was. But I thought that just, you know, the ACC looked so good all year. I still think the Big 12 was the best conference, top to bottom. There was not as much at the bottom of the. There are no easy wins in the Big 12.
No BC.
Yeah. I mean, it's. It feels like every conference has a couple of those teams, but really you don't. The Big 12 is, I mean, you want to go to Austin, you call that an easy win on the road at Texas. Like, you should win that game, but that's not easy.
Well, they do have a bottom two. It's just that they only have 10 schools. So the bottom two are the schools that don't exist in the standings for the Big 12.
Right. Well, but even so, the ACC, you had 9 teams in the tournament, everybody talking about, you know, how far each one of them could go. I always thought Louisville was a sitting duck because of their offense can go in a hole sometimes. But they go 7-8 on opening weekend, which doesn't sound so bad until you realize, well, that's 9 teams, and 8 of them are now eliminated, and the only one left is North Carolina.
And a lot of high seeds, too.
Right.
A lot of
upsets.
A lot of preferred seeds that were playing a little closer to home, even though Duke lost in South Carolina to South Carolina. From what I understand, North Carolina is right next to South Carolina.
I believe it's right on top of it.
I think so. It very well could be just to the north. I've seen enough seasons where the heralded league goes belly up that first weekend that it's not as much a statement of the league as a statement of the matchups and statement of the conditions of different teams as they enter, you know, the tournament and what have you. But the fact that they only have one team and the Big Ten, which was much maligned during the course of the season, has 3. And 2 of those 3 teams are lower-seeded teams that you would not expect to get that far. That's a surprise.
I'm not as surprised that there aren't more mid-majors. We've talked before we came on. Gonzaga, sort of a
sergeant major.
Right. A larger than we don't consider them mid-major, but they certainly are. But that, I think that really had more to do with just really tough matchups and really kind of tough seeding setups for both St. Mary's and especially Wichita State. Wichita State, that Wichita State-Kentucky game, I think was the best game in the tournament so far. And in terms of just two really good teams going at each other, trying to negate each other's style, trying to you know, just battle. And it wasn't the most exciting in terms of points, but either of those teams probably could have beaten anybody else in the field.
2 of the better seasons in Wichita State's history have come in the last 4 years. Each year they've been in Kentucky's pod, and each year they've come up short. Valiant effort. They had that unbeaten team back in 2014, and then they had this team that I thought was much better than a number 10 seed. And Greg Marshall's got to be wondering, what do I need to do to get a decent seed? And what do I need to do to get away from Kentucky? Back in the 90s, Utah with Rick Majerus, they'd always be paired up with Kentucky. The year they finally get to the Final Four, they lose to Kentucky in the championship game. He couldn't get the Wildcats away from him far enough.
Well, the one good thing for Marshall and Wichita State, they will get literally everybody who played more than 5 minutes a game back next year. I mean, it's their entire rotation is coming back. So
their walk-ons are gone. That's a concern. The coach will always be concerned.
If they have a year, I mean, like they did a few years ago, I mean, they will be in position to, you know, have maybe one loss or maybe no losses, even, you know, going to the tournament if they can put it together. And who knows? Maybe that could finally be the year that the committee does not underseed them and they get a
better
they'll
just
shot.
Be in North Carolina's bracket that year.
Right. So who do you think was maybe the most impressive We talked about the biggest surprise.
Right.
Wait, who impressed you the most? Were maybe a team looked better than you thought they were, or really, really beat a team you didn't think they could beat?
I thought that Purdue really played well over the course of the weekend, because they lost in the Big Ten quarterfinals to a Michigan team that's had incredible momentum, but Purdue has checked out early so often in the past that you almost thought, okay, Iowa State, they're hot, they're playing really well, Big 12 champions, and Purdue with Swanigan and Haas, you know, just really impressed me with how they were able to elevate their game in a contest that they very well could have lost.
And yeah, they very nearly did.
There are a lot of teams like Oregon could have lost. Oregon probably should have lost to Rhode Island. The Rams gave them all they can handle. And sometimes you're very close to saying, God, they really should have lost that game. But you know what? With a 3-point shot, it's just a coulda. No, shoulda.
I would say that North Carolina should have lost that game to Arkansas.
Yeah.
They I'm impressed though that they pulled it out. They've not been in a lot of those games this year. And I was looking back through their game log. They only have 2 wins all season where they've scored fewer points than they did in that win yesterday, which was a neutral court win against Wisconsin, where they scored, I think it was 71 instead of 72, and against Virginia, they scored 65. We're talking about 2 really, really good defensive teams. Those are the only games that they've won when they've been held that low, but that's 3 quality teams now that they've beaten despite playing well out of their style, and to me, that bodes well for them going forward, knowing that they can win a 99-93 game and also win a 72-69 game or whatever.
I have a good friend who roots for North Carolina basketball. He also roots for Alabama football, the Steelers and the Braves, so go figure. But he called me multiple times yesterday. He calls me when they're not up 20 at the under 16 mark of a first-round game. He was very concerned. And the truth is, under Roy Williams, he has talented teams. They play well, and when they play well, they're very good. But they have kind of a basketball ADD where they just forget what planet they're on for maybe a couple possessions at a time. Sometimes against Duke, it's 2, 3, 4 minutes at a time where you're just wondering, what are these kids doing? They're going to do that again this year, and you just have to accept it. But they were able to play their way out of what looked like an embarrassing loss for not just for them, but for the conference, because of that. If they lose that game to Arkansas, ACC's 0 for the Sweet 16 this year.
Yeah, which would have been really incredible.
That would have been the headline.
So looking ahead, we've got the second weekend coming up. Certainly with Villanova gone, that whole region, the East looks completely different, looks wide open. And, you know, some of them have played out to a degree as we expected. We still have some one seeds kicking around. But what do you see? Is there a team that suddenly has a much clearer path to the Final Four? Is there anything that you've seen that makes you rethink maybe what you thought as far as a likely national champion?
I think Wisconsin winning their second round game against Villanova. I want to say the first year under Dick Bennett, when they made the Final Four in 2000, they were an 8 seed upset. I want to say either a Stanford or an Arizona or someone of that ilk, and got to in what was a very butchered bracket, was able to get to the Final Four. I think with their bigs, I think with their ability to get high percentage shots consistently, and the fact that Happ can do more than just score down low, he can also pass a little bit, and Hayes, but Hayes is still the guy that everybody looks towards. I think they're a dangerous team, and there's no reason to think that they won't be able to beat a Florida and won't be able to beat a South Carolina Baylor winner. I think West Virginia can beat Gonzaga, and I think I'm playing ahead and around, but I'm looking forward to a West Virginia Arizona matchup, because the Wildcats, for however good they've been, they've not gotten to the Final Four under Sean Miller, and they've come painstakingly close. West Virginia under Huggins has just looked like, when they've been on this season, they've been a team that you haven't wanted to watch.
Yeah, they played a pretty good Notre Dame team on Saturday. It was that early game on Saturday, and Notre Dame hit their threes. I mean, they hit a lot of threes. They scored, and it didn't matter. They still got beat by 10 or 11 points, I think it was. When West Virginia plays up to its potential, that they are a scary. I mean, they have the style of a VCU to mess you up, but then the talent of a major conference team to be able to score, to be able to rebound, especially offensive rebound, and get extra possessions. They just kill you with these little tiny cuts of extra possessions. You mentioned Wisconsin. I think both them and Michigan have emerging paths here. Kansas has always felt like the fraudulent one seed to me.
Yeah, they've always found a way to lose to a Northern Iowa. And right. They, you know what? It's unfair because they did win the national championship in 2008. They have been to Final Fours since, but you know, you lose to a Northern Iowa, you lose to a VCU closer to home, and with all the advantages of being a top seed, you deserve that label, right or wrong.
They're going to have their hands full with each. If they advance, all the other three teams in their region are going to give them trouble in very different ways. And I could see easily without Boucher, I could see Michigan beating Oregon. Either way, I think Kansas is going to get tested. So, I could actually see Michigan and Wisconsin, 7 and 8 seeds. Yeah. Like that would be the I would never have expected that a week ago, that they could both end up in the Final Four.
Two number eights advanced to the Final Four in 2000. North Carolina was a that was a year that they played.
Florida
lost to Michigan State in the championship game, I believe. Wisconsin played Michigan State in the semifinal. It was a 56-46 game, I think, that set the game back 20 years.
It was like a 1-5 and two eights.
Yeah. So, but you talk about a team like Kansas. Purdue's got the bigs. Michigan's got the emotion. Oregon just has the crazy color combinations. That's what really scares me.
Well, they've also got Dylan Brooks, which is why I still picked them to come out of this, even with Boucher's injury, because he is one of those guys who is just absolutely built for March. I mean, he hits every big shot that's asked of him. When you need a guy to take over a game for a few minutes, he just does. And I don't know how long they can ride out him and the rest of the talent that's still on that team. But I still think they're the best team out of the Pac-12. It'd be interesting to see where they end up.
The one bracket where the seeds held: UNC, Kentucky, UCLA, Butler. You've got three blue bloods and a fourth team that wears blue as well and has been in as many Final Fours as just about anybody has over the last 10 years.
So, national champion at this point, who do you think has the best shot?
I had Duke initially. I think Kansas has, even with all the the pitfalls that are in that West bracket, I am confident in them. Kentucky looks really darn good. UCLA, I like what Steve Alford has done there. It would be fitting, a bookend 30 years removed from winning the national championship at Indiana. I think West Virginia is the team, though, that comes out of this bracket, and we crown Huggins. I don't know if he'll get a suit for the parade or he'll just go with another track suit.
I love that.
He'll actually dress down.
The cutoff quarter zip is...
Yes.
I'm normally in favor of the Jay Wright style of, you know, nice trim, but it fits for him.
I prefer coaches who choose your style and go all out, because you can go Jay Wright, dress up. You can go all the coaches who wear the orange red blazers that are unacceptable, except that's the school colors. And then there's the Huggins, you know, I'm hanging out at the gym. But you have like a Mike Bray who wears a suit but has the shirt open. It's no, don't. Be what you're going to be. Don't give us a halfway look, sir.
Yeah, that's why they lost. That's why West Virginia beat them.
Blaming that.
I picked West Virginia in the national finals in my bracket, and I if they can get past Arizona, I feel pretty good about them getting there. I feel like that UNC and Kentucky have been on that collision course. That's when they first released the bracket, you look down and you go, oh, right, that's that Elite Eight game. I think that could decide the national title, who advances out of that Elite Eight game.
I like how the Wildcats have played since their early stumbles and their length and just their maturity that a different Kentucky team. We've seen Kentucky teams lose to the likes of Wichita State yesterday. They didn't. They held on. They persevered against a very good team, probably one of the top 12 schools in the nation that somehow got a bad seed.
Yeah, and don't ever try to project ahead based on a close win, thinking that means a team's dead. Remember that when Florida won the national title, they survived their opening round game on a tip-in, I believe it was by Mike Miller, at the buzzer off of an offensive rebound to win by one, and then reeled off five more runs in a row.
Every team that wins a national championship, more often than not, the team that wins the national championship, there's always one game in that six that not only could they have lost that game, but you know what? They probably should have lost that game. And there have been a lot of games this past weekend where the schools that have advanced have just simply survived.
Well, we will see what happens. There's still plenty of potential for upsets. There's still plenty of teams that we didn't think were going to be there at this point that are still alive with a chance to make a run.
I think we can still do that bracket game. We can reset after the first weekend at WTOP.com.
We actually have a Sweet 16 bracket challenge, and we'll also have a Final Four one in case you butcher that one, just like we butchered the first round. But
After that, you're on your own.
Yeah, go ahead and sign up for that. Give yourself a second shot. And thanks for joining us.